The Blue Lenses by Daphne du Maurier, Part 2. Marda West did not move. Only her hand, mechanically, continued to cream her cheek. The snake was not motionless. It turned and twisted all the time, as though examining the pots of cream, the scent, the powder. How does it feel to see yourself again? Nurse Ansel's voice emerging from the snake's head seemed all the more grotesque and horrible. Marda West felt sickness rise in her stomach, choking her. She turned away, but as she did so, the steady hands of the nurse gripped her. She suffered herself to be led to her bed, eyes closed. Poor dear, it's been too much for you. The gentle voice, so soothing and so calm, could only belong to one who understood. We can't have Mr. West seeing you like this. I've half a mind to telephone him to stay away. No, please. I want to see him. I must see him. Fear made her open her eyes, but directly she did so, the sickness gripped her again, for the snake's head was twisting out of its nurse's collar. A sound came from Nurse Ansel, expressing disquiet. "Something has turned you very sick," she said. "What was the dinner this evening?"
Steamed fish. I wasn't hungry.
I wonder if it was fresh. I'll see if anyone has complained. Meanwhile, lie still, dear, and don't upset yourself." The door quietly opened and closed again. Now Marda was certain that what was happening was real, was true. Some evil force encompassed the nursing home and its inhabitants. They were all partners in some gigantic crime, the purpose of which could not be understood. One thing was certain. She must not let them know that she suspected them. One slip and she was lost. The door opened, and Nurse Ansel was back. Marda West forced a smile. "What a nuisance I am," she said. "I felt giddy, but I'm better now." The gliding snake held a bottle in her hand. She came over to the wash basin and, taking the medicine glass, poured out 3 drops. "This should settle it, Mrs. West." Fear gripped the patient once again, for surely the words themselves constituted a threat. "This should settle it. Settle what?" She took the medicine glass handed to her and invented a subterfuge.
"Could you find me a clean handkerchief in the drawer there?"
"Of course." The snake turned its head, and as it did so, Marda West poured the contents of the glass onto the floor. Then, fascinated, repelled, she watched the twisting head peer into the contents of the drawer, search for a handkerchief, and bring it back again. "Tell me," the voice said, "are you disappointed? Do I look as you expected me to look?" "A trap. She must be careful."
"I think you do," Marda said slowly. "But it's difficult to tell with the cap. I can't see your hair."
Nurse Ansel laughed, the low, soft laugh that had been so alluring during the long weeks of blindness. She put up her hands, and in a moment the whole snake's head was revealed. "Do you approve?" she asked. Marda West forced herself to smile.
"Very pretty," she said. "Very pretty indeed."
"When I go home with you," said Nurse Ansel, "I needn't wear a uniform." Marda West felt suddenly cold. In the turmoil of the day, she had forgotten the plans. Nurse Ansel was to be with them for a week. It was all arranged. The vital thing was not to show fear. Nothing must seem changed. And then, when Jim arrived, she would tell him everything. If he could not see the snake's head, and indeed it was possible that he would not, if her hypervision was caused by the lenses, he must just understand that for reasons too deep to explain, she no longer trusted Nurse Ansel. The telephone rang on the bedside table, and Marda West seized it. It was her husband. "Sorry to be late," he said. "I'll jump into a taxi and be with you right away. The lawyer kept me."
"Lawyer?" she asked.
"Yes, you remember. About the trust fund."
She had forgotten. There had been so many financial discussions before the operation. "Oh, yes." Was it satisfactory?
I think so. I'll tell you directly.
He rang off. And looking up, she saw the snake's head watching her.
He must promise not to get too excited when Mr. West comes.
I'm not excited. I just long to see him, that's all.
For the first time, Marda West had the impression that the snake was not entirely at its ease. It sensed tension. It knew. It could not help but know that the atmosphere had changed between nurse and patient. The snake hovered at the end of the bed. Then, the tongue darting rapidly in and out, Nurse Ansell left the room. The taxi came at last. Jim's voice rang out in the street below. Her heart began to beat fast, and she watched the door. She heard his footstep outside, and then his voice again. He must be saying something to the snake. She would know at once if he had seen the head. He would come into the room, either startled, not believing his eyes, or laughing, declaring it a joke. Why did he not hurry? Why must they linger there, talking, their voices hushed? The door opened. The familiar umbrella and bowler hat, the first objects to appear round the corner. Then the comforting, burly figure. But, oh, God, no. Please, God. Not Jim, too. Not Jim, forced into a mask, forced into an organisation of devils, of liars. Jim had a vulture's head. She lay in sick and speechless horror. I gather you're not too well, he said, turning his vulture's head. Feeling a bit out of sorts? She was too numb to answer. She lay quite still as he approached the bed and bent to kiss her. The vulture's beak was sharp.
It's a reaction, Nurse Ansell says, he went on. The sudden shock of being able to see again. She says it will be much better when we get you home.
We. Nurse Ansell and Jim. The plan still held, then. I don't know, she said faintly, but I want Nurse Ansell to come home.
Not want Nurse Ansell?
He sounded startled.
But it was you who suggested it.
There was no time to reply, as Nurse Ansell herself came into the room. Cup of coffee, Mr. West. It was the evening routine, yet tonight... It sounded strange, as though it had been arranged outside the door.
Thanks, Nurse, I'd love some. What's this nonsense about not coming home with us?
The vulture turned to the snake, and Marda West knew, as she watched them, that the plan for Nurse Ansell to come home had not been her own after all. She remembered now that the first suggestion had come from Nurse Ansell herself. It had come after Jim had spent the evening laughing and joking, and his wife had listened, her eyes bandaged, happy to hear him. Now, watching the smooth snake, she knew why Nurse Ansell wanted to return with her, and she knew, too, why Jim had not opposed it. The vulture opened its blood-stained beak.
Don't say you two have fallen out.
Impossible. The nurse looked sideways at the vulture.
Mrs. West's just had a trying day, haven't you, dear?
How best to answer? Neither must know. Neither the vulture nor the snake must ever know. I'm all right, Marta said. A bit mixed up. I'll be better in the morning. They would not destroy her. She had, for all her bewildered terror, the will to live.
I won't bother you with these documents tonight, said the vulture. You can sign them at home.
What documents? If she kept her eyes averted, she need not see the vulture's head. The voice was Jim's, steady and reassuring.
The trust fund papers Forbes and Millwall gave me. They suggest I should become a co-director of the fund.
The words struck a chord, a thread of memory. Something to do with her eyes. If the operation was not successful, she would have difficulty in signing her name. What for? She asked, her voice unsteady. After all, it is my money. He laughed. And turning to the sound, she saw the beak open.
It gaped like a trap and then closed again. Of course it is, he said. That's not the point. The point is that I should be able to sign for you, if you should be ill or away. Marda West looked at the snake, and the snake, aware, shrank into its collar. Don't stay too long, Mr. West, murmured Nurse Ansell. Our patient must have a real rest tonight. She glided from the room, and Marda West was left alone with her husband, the vulture. I don't propose to go away, she said, or be ill. Probably not. These fellows always want safeguards. Anyway, I won't bore you with it now. Could it be that the voice was over-casual? That the hand, stuffing the document into the pocket of the greatcoat, was a claw? Did you really mean that? Jim asked. About Nurse Ansell? I don't know, she said. It seems to be rather silly to go home with a nurse, now that I can see again. He did not answer at once. The head sank deeper between the shoulders. I think she's a treasure, he said. And you're bound to feel groggy at first. I vote we stick to the plan. After all, if it doesn't work, we can always send her away. Perhaps, said his wife. She was trying to think if there was anyone left whom she could trust. A married brother in South Africa, friends in London, no one with whom she was intimate, not to this extent. She was quite alone, wholly conscious of the hatred and cruelty about her. Only 2 more days, thank goodness, said her husband. Then you'll be home again. But once back there with a vulture and a snake, would she not be more completely at their mercy than she was here? Did Grief say Thursday for certain? She asked. He told me so this morning when he telephoned. You'll have the other lenses then, the ones that show colour. The ones that would show the bodies too. That was the explanation. The blue lenses only showed the heads. They were the first test. Greaves, the surgeon, was in this too, naturally. She sought wildly in her memory to try to recall a look, a sign, which would give her some insight into this dreadful plot, this conspiracy against her person or her sanity. You look pretty peaky, he said suddenly. I think I'd better go. He got up from the chair, a heavy, hooded figure, and she closed her eyes as he came to kiss her good night. The well-remembered kiss would have restored her, but not the stab of the vulture's beak, the thrusting, blood-stained beak. When he had gone, she began to moan, turning her head upon the pillow. The door opened again, and she put her hand to her mouth. They must not hear her cry. They must not see her cry. How are you feeling, Mrs. West? The snake stood at the bottom of the bed, and by her side the house physician. She had always liked him, a young, pleasant man, and although, like the others, he had an animal's head, it did not frighten her. It was a dog's head, an Aberdeen's. Long ago as a child, she had owned an Aberdeen. Could I speak to you alone? She asked. Of course. Do you mind, nurse? He jerked his head at the door, and she had gone. You'll think me very foolish, she began, but it's the lenses. I can't get used to them. He came over, his head cocked in sympathy. I'm sorry about that, he said. They don't hurt you, do they? No, she said. No, I can't feel them. It's just that they make everyone look strange. They're bound to do that. They don't show colour. His voice was cheerful, friendly. And you mustn't forget, you're pulled about quite a bit. The nerves behind the eyes are still very tender. Yes, she said. His voice, even his head, gave her confidence. Have you known people who've had this operation before?
Yes, scores of them. In a couple of days you'll be right as rain. You'll actually see more clearly in every way. One patient told me that it was as though she'd been wearing spectacles all her life, and then, because of the operation, she realised she saw all her friends and her family as they really were.
As they really were, she repeated.
The Aberdeen nodded his head. Mr. Greaves did a wonderful job on you. He was able to strengthen a nerve he thought had perished. He never had the use of it before, so who knows, Mrs. West, you may have made medical history. Anyway, Sleep well, and the best of luck.
He trotted from the room. The comforting words had turned to gall.
In one sense, they were a relief, because his explanation seemed to suggest there was no plot against her.
She used the words he had used himself. Marta West could see people as they really were. And those whom she had loved and trusted most were in truth a vulture and a snake.
The door opened, and Nurse Ansell entered the room.
"Ready to settle down?" she asked.
"Yes, thank you."
There might be no conspiracy, but even so, all trust, all faith were over. She watched the snake tuck in the sheet. Then the twisting neck peered closer.
"Now, remember to ring your bell if you want anything."
"I'll remember."
The voice that had once seemed tender was over-smooth and false.
"How deceptive our ears," thought Marta West. "What traitors to truth."
And for the first time, she became aware of her own new latent power. The power to tell truth from falsehood, good from evil.
"Good night, Mrs. West."
"Good night."
Lying awake, her bedside clock ticking, Marta West decided upon her plan. She waited until 11 o'clock, an hour past the time when she knew that all the patients were settled and asleep. Then she crept out of bed and began to dress. When she was ready, she went to the door and softly turned the handle. All was quiet in the corridor. She looked to the left, where the nurse on duty sat. The snake was there, sitting crouched over a book. Marta West waited. She was prepared to wait for hours, and presently the sound she hoped for came, the bell from a patient. The snake lifted its head and checked the red light on the wall. Then she glided off down the corridor. Directly she had disappeared, Marta West left her own room and went to the head of the staircase. She listened carefully and then crept downstairs. In the main hall, she waited at the bottom of the stairway until she was certain of not being observed. She could see the night porter's back. His head was not visible, for he was bent over his desk, but when it straightened, she noticed the broad fish face. She shrugged her shoulders. She had not dared all this way to be frightened by a fish. Boldly she walked through the hall. The fish was staring at her.
"Do you want anything, madam?" he said.
He was as stupid as she expected. She shook her head.
"I'm going out. Good night."
And she walked straight past him, out of the swing door and into the street. In the distance, Marta West saw the lights of Oxford Street. The friendly traffic drew her like a magnet, the distant lights, the distant men and women. When she came to Oxford Street, she paused, wondering of a sudden where she should go, whom she could ask for refuge. And it came to her once again that there was no one, no one at all, because the couple passing her now, a toad's head on a short black body clutching a panther's arm, could give her no protection, and the policeman standing at the corner was a baboon. No one was human, no one was safe. She turned and ran, bumping into them. Seeing her run, they turned and looked at her. They screamed and yapped. They gave chase. Down Oxford Street she ran, alone in an animal world.
"Lie quite still, Mrs. West. I'm not going to hurt you."
She recognized the voice of Mr. Greaves, the surgeon. And dimly she told herself that they had got hold of her again. She was back at the nursing home. They had replaced the bandages over her eyes, and for this she was thankful. Such blessed darkness, the evil of the night hidden.
"Now, Mrs. West, I think your troubles are over. No pain and no confusion with these lenses. The world's in colour again."
The bandages were being removed. And suddenly everything was clear. It was day. And the face of Mr. Greaves smiled down at her. At his side was a rounded, cheerful nurse.
"Where are your masks?" asked the patient.
"We didn't need masks for this little job," said the surgeon. "We were only taking out the temporary lenses."
She let her eyes drift round the room.
Something happened to me, didn't it? She said. I tried to get away.
The nurse glanced at the surgeon. He nodded his head.
Yes, you did. And frankly, I don't blame you. I blame myself. Those lenses I inserted yesterday were pressing upon a tiny nerve, and the pressure threw out your balance. That's all over now.
His smile was reassuring. And the large, warm eyes of Nurse Brand, it must surely be Nurse Brand, gazed down at her in sympathy.
It was very terrible, said the patient. I can never explain how terrible.
The door opened, and the young physician entered.
Patient fully restored? He asked. I think so, said the surgeon. What about it, Mrs. West?
Marda West stared gravely at the three of them.
I thought you were dogs, she said.
I thought you were a hunt terrier, Mr. Greaves, and that you were an Aberdeen. The house physician laughed.
But I am, he said. It's my native tone. Your judgment was not wholly out, Mrs. West. I congratulate you.
Marda West did not join in the laugh. The doctors were moving towards the door, still laughing, and Marda West, sensing the normal atmosphere, said,
Who found me then? Who brought me back?
Mr. Greaves glanced back at her from the door.
You didn't get very far, Mrs. West. The porter followed you. It's all finished with now, said the house physician. The person who really had the full shock was poor Nurse Ansell when she found you weren't in your bed.
Nurse Ansell. The revulsion of the night before was not so easily forgotten.
Don't say our little starlet was an animal, too, smiled the house doctor.
Marda West felt herself colour. Lies would have to begin.
No, she said quickly. No, of course not.
Nurse Ansell is here now, said Nurse Brand. She was so upset when she went off duty that she wouldn't go back to the hostel. Would you care to have a word with her? Apprehension seized the patient, but before she could answer, the house doctor called down the passage.
Mrs. West wants to say good morning to you.
Mr. Greaves waved his hand and was gone. Nurse Brand went after him, and the house doctor stepped back against the wall to admit Nurse Ansell. Marda West stared, then tremulously began to smile and held out her hand.
How could she have seen Nurse Ansell as a snake? The hazel eyes, the clear olive skin, the dark hair trim under the frilled cap, and that smile, that slow, understanding smile.
Patient and nurse held hands.
I still don't understand what happened, she said, clinging to the nurse. Mr. Greaves tried to explain something about a nerve.
Nurse Ansell made a face towards the door.
He doesn't know himself, she whispered.
And he's not going to say either, or he'll find himself in trouble. She looked down at her patient.
She was so pretty, so gentle.
Don't think about it, she said. You're going to be happy from now on.
Promise me? I promise, said Marda West.
The telephone rang, and Nurse Ansell reached for the receiver.
You know who this is going to be, she said.
Your poor husband.
She gave the receiver to Marda West.
Jim? Jim, is that you?
The loved voice sounding so anxious at the other end.
Are you all right? He said. What the devil's been happening?
Marda West smiled and handed the receiver to the nurse.
You tell him, she said.
Nurse Ansell held the receiver to her ear.
Is that you, Mr. West? She said.
Our patient gave us a fright, didn't she? Well, you don't have to worry any more. Mr. Greaves changed the lenses. They were pressing on a nerve, but everything's now all right. He said we could come home tomorrow.
Marda West reached once more for the receiver.
Jim, I had a hideous night, she said. I'm only just beginning to understand it now. A nerve in the brain.
So I gather, he said. Thank God they've traced it. That fellow Greaves can't have known his job.
Can't happen again, she said. Now the proper lenses are in, it can't happen again.
It'd better not, he said, or I'll sue him. How are you feeling?
Wonderful, she said. Bewildered, but wonderful.
Good girl, he said. Don't excite yourself. I'll be along later.
His voice went.
Marda West gave the receiver to Nurse Ansell.
Did Mr. Greaves really say I could go home tomorrow? She asked.
Yes, if you're good, Nurse Ansell smiled. Are you sure you still want me to come with you?
Why, yes, said Marda West. It's all arranged.
She sat up in bed, and the sun came streaming through the window, throwing light on the roses, the lilies, the tall-stemmed iris.
The most precious thing in the world, she said. It's sight. I know now. I know what I might have lost.
Nurse Ansell nodded her head in sympathy. You've got your sight back, she said. That's the miracle. You won't ever lose it now. She moved to the door. I'll slip back to the hostel and get some rest. Is there anything you want before I go?
Give me my lipstick, said the patient, and the brush and comb.
Nurse Ansell fetched the things from the dressing table. She brought the hand mirror too, and the bottle of scent, and with a little smile of intimacy, sniffed at the stopper.
Oh, gorgeous, she murmured.
This is what Mr. West gave you, isn't it?
Already, thought Marda West.
Nurse Ansell fitted in. I'll be with you at 8 o'clock.
The familiar words,
said every morning now for so many days and weeks, sounded in her ear like a melody, loved through repetition. At last they were joined to the individual, the one whose eyes promised friendship and loyalty.
See you this evening.
The door closed. Nurse Ansell had gone. Marda West took the stopper from the scent bottle and put it behind her ears. She lifted the hand mirror and looked into it. Nothing changed in the room. The street noises penetrated from outside, and presently the little maid, who had seemed a weasel yesterday, came in to dust the room.
She said, "Good morning." But the patient did not answer.
Perhaps she was tired. The maid dusted and went her way. Then Marda West took up the mirror and looked into it once more. No, she had not been mistaken. The eyes that stared back at her were doe's eyes, wary before sacrifice, and the timid deer's head was meek, already bowed.